भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 2, Maharaj Nimi meets the nine Yogendras. Text number 48. Word meanings, grihitva, accepting, api, even though, indriyai, with his senses, arthan, objects of the senses, yaha, who, nadveshti, does not hate, Nahrishyati, does not rejoice, Vishnoho, of the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, Mayam, the illusory potentate, Idam, this material universe, Pasyan, seeing as, Saha, he, Vai, indeed, Bhagavata Uttama, a first class devotee. Grihitva pindriyartam yona dveshti narishyati vishnor mayam idam pasyan savai bhagavata grihitva pindriyartam Yona dveshti narishyati Vishnor mayam idam pasyan Savai bhagavatottama Grihitva pindriyartam Yona dveshti narishyati Vishnor mayam idam pasyan Savai bhagavatottama Vishnor mayam idam pasyan Savai bhagavatottama Translation, even while engaging his senses in contact with their objects, one who sees this world, whole world as the energy of Lord Vishnu is neither repelled nor elated. He is indeed the greatest among devotees. We have a manageable purport today. It's about 4 pages. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, the position of the Uttama Adhikari, or first-class devotee of the Lord, is so worshipable that additional symptoms are now given in 8 verses. It should be understood that unless one comes in contact with the lotus feet of a pure devotee of the Lord, the path of freedom from material illusion is very difficult to understand. In the 5th verse of Sri Upadeshamrita, Srila Rupa Goswami has stated, Sushushaya bhajana vigyam ananya manya nindadi shunyaridam ipsital sunga labdhya. One should associate with and faithfully serve that pure devotee who is advanced in undeviated devotional service and whose heart is completely devoid of the propensity to criticize others. Srila Prabhupada comments, in this verse, Srila Rupa Goswami advises the devotee to be intelligent enough to distinguish between the Kanishta Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari, and Uttama Adhikari. A neophyte Vaishnava or a Vaishnava situated on the intermediate platform can also accept disciples, but such disciples must be on the same platform, and it should be understood that they cannot advance very well toward the ultimate goal of life under his insufficient guidance. Therefore, disciples should be careful to accept an Uttama Adhikari as a spiritual master. Therefore, additional symptoms will now be given so that the conditioned soul who desires to go back home, back to Godhead, can properly identify the bona fide spiritual master. According to Srila Sridhar Swami and Srila Jiva Goswami, associating with a pure devotee of the Lord is so important that now that the various categories of devotional service have been defined, 8 additional verses are given according to the qualifications of a pure devotee, so that students of Srimad Bhagavatam will make no mistake in this connection. Similarly, in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asked Krishna about the symptoms of a completely Krishna conscious person, and Krishna elaborately explained the symptoms of one who is pragya pratishta, or established in Krishna consciousness. The particular qualification mentioned in this verse is Vishnor Mayam Idam Pasyan. One should see the entire material universe as a product of the illusory energy of the Lord. There is no question of lamenting or rejoicing for what is the property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Within this world, one generally laments upon losing something desirable and rejoices upon acquiring the object of his wish. But since a pure devotee has no personal desire whatsoever, Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Ata Eva Shanta, there is no question of gain or loss. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 18:54, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nashochiti Nakanchiti Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Labhute Param. One who is transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires to have anything. He is equally disposed to every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. Similarly, Lord Shiva says to his wife Parvati, while glorifying the character of King Chitraketu, Narayana para sarve, nakutaschana bhidyati, swarga pavarga narakeshu apitulyarta darshanaha. Devotees solely engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. Bhagavatam 6:17-28. This state of complete satisfaction in the devotional service of Krishna is not a mental concoction achieved by artificial meditation, but is a result of having experienced the superior nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is a reservoir of transcendental bliss. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 2:59, Raso Varjam Rasopyasya Param Drishtva Nivartate. When impersonalists and voidists artificially try to push material things out of their minds, they undergo great hardships and ordeals in their artificial meditation. Klesho dikatoroste sham avyakta satvachetasam avyakta hi gatir dukram dehavadhir avapyate. Bhagavad Gita 12:5. According to Lord Krishna, it is only with great inconvenience and suffering that one can achieve impersonal liberation, because every living being is eternally a person, being part and parcel of the Supreme Person, Krishna. The concept of giving up one's personal identity is a reaction to the terrible frustration of material egotism. It is not a positive program. If one is suffering unbearable pain in his hand, he may agree to have the hand amputated, but the real solution is to remove the infection so that the healthy hand may become a source of pleasure. Similarly, ego, or the sense that I am, is a source of unlimited happiness when we understand what we are, namely servants of Krishna. Impersonal meditation is dry and troublesome. A pure devotee realizes that he is an eternal person, part and parcel of the Supreme Person, Lord Krishna, and that he has the privilege as the Son of God to participate in the ecstatic eternal pastimes of the Supreme Lord, loving Krishna and playing with him forever. For such a devotee, the pale material nature, which is but a perverted reflection of the spiritual world, becomes totally unattractive. Therefore, one who is completely attached to Krishna and uninterested in the manifestations of Maya can be considered Bhagavatottamaha, a pure devotee of the Lord, as described in a previous verse, Bhakti Pareshanu Bhavo Viratiranyatra Cha. Srila Madhvacharya has stated, Vishnor Mayam Vishnu Vichya Dinam. The words Vishnor Mayam in this verse indicate that the illusory energy always remains dependent upon the will of Lord Vishnu. Similarly, the Brahma Samhita 5:44 says, Trishti Stiti Pralaya Sadhana Shaktireta Chayeva Yasya Bhuvanani Vibharti Durga. Maya is like a shadow of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who serves him in the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of this world. Just as a shadow has no independent power of movement, but follows the substance that casts the shadow, the illusory energy of the Lord has no independent power, but bewilders the living entities according to the Lord's desire. One of Krishna's opulences is that he is supremely detached. When a living entity wants to forget him, Krishna immediately employs his illusory energy to facilitate the foolishness of the conditioned soul. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the words Grihitva Pindriyar Artan indicate that the pure devotee of the Lord does not cease acting within this world. Rather, he uses his senses in the service of the Lord of the senses, Rishikesh. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. Srila Rupa Goswami has stated that if one gives up those material things which are favorable for serving Krishna, considering them material and therefore an impediment to his spiritual advancement, his renunciation is merely hogu vairagya, or immature and imperfect renunciation. On the other hand, one who accepts all material things for the service of Krishna without any personal desire for sense gratification is actually renounced. Yuktam vairagyam uchite. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has warned in this connection, in his commentary on this verse, that by envying any of the three classes of devotees, Uttama Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari, or Kanishta Adhikari, one falls down to the platform of impersonalism and loses all power to benefit others or even himself. Therefore, those who are trying to advance in Krishna consciousness should not endanger their transcendental experience by unnecessarily criticizing other Vaishnavas. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, if one engages in pogu vairagya, or renouncing material things that are favorable to the service of Lord Krishna, one runs the risk of being polluted by impersonal philosophy. On the other hand, by sticking to the principle of yukta vairagya, engaging everything for Krishna without personal desire, one can remain aloof from the danger of material sense gratification and gradually come to the Maha Bhagavata platform, as mentioned in this verse. Om Agyanatimarandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. We just finished reading the three verses having to do with these three levels, the three different adhikaris. The word adhikar means privilege or license, you might say. Seva adhikar die koronija dasi. We pray in the Tulsi prayer. Seva adhikar die. Please give me the adhikar for seva. So adhikari means different levels of privilege in having the association of Krishna and having the service of Krishna. So the first one, which this now we're talking about, as the purport mentioned, we're hearing more about the Uttama Adhikari. And Uttama Adhikari, this was the verse about the Uttama Adhikari. Sarva bhuteshu yapasyed bhagavad bhavam atmanaha bhutani bhagavad yatmani esha bhagavat uttama. The most advanced devotees see within everything the soul of all souls, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Consequently, he sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord and understands that everything that exists is eternally situated within the Lord. So there are two main points here. He sees Krishna within everything and everything within Krishna. So this verse today, while engaging his senses in contact with their sense objects, one sees this whole world as the energy of Lord Vishnu. One who sees this world as the energy of Lord Vishnu is neither repelled nor elated. He is indeed the greatest among devotees. So we're getting eight more verses about Uttamadhikari. This is the first one. And it's focusing on this point of seeing the energy of the Lord as the Lord himself. In the purport, now we're getting commentaries, our esteemed commentators, ISKCON commentators, are quoting from various acharyas, beginning with Sridhar Swami. Sridhar Swami is the original commentator on the Bhagavatam. He appeared a few hundred years before Lord Chaitanya. He's often just called the commentator, Jiva Goswami. When he does his sandarbhas, he will just say, and the commentator says, and that means Sridhar Swami. So he's Sridhar, because Jiva Goswami often quotes commentaries on the Bhagavatam. So the original Bhagavatam commentary is Sridhar Swami. So Sridhar Swami says we're going to hear more. Havi Rishi is telling us more about the Uttama Adhikari because the Uttama Adhikari is so exalted. Of course, Uttama itself, the word means exalted. One meaning of Uttama is above Tama. Tama Guna is one of the modes of material nature, and sometimes all of material nature is encapsulated in that one word. We don't have to say all gunas, we just say Tamaguna. It's a place of ignorance. So Uttama means above this material world, transcendental. The Uttama Adhikari is transcendental. He's in that exalted position. And it was also said here that we're hearing more about them because it's so important to understand the characteristics of the Uttama Adhikari. And we had this striking sentence here that was asked about yesterday, how one should accept the Uttama Adhikari as a guru, because if one accepts the Madhyama as a guru, one cannot advance beyond that. One cannot, what does it say? That under his insufficient guidance, one cannot advance very well toward the ultimate goal of life. So Janmashtami Prabhu gave a good response to that question. And he said, basically, that we don't just have, we're not limited to one guru. We have so many gurus. And of course, we have Srila Prabhupada as the ultimate Siksha guru for everyone in ISKCON. So it's not that we have insufficient guidance. We can take guidance from so many others, and especially ultimately from Srila Prabhupada. And he's left us so much instruction. It's not that we're at a loss for where to go, where to turn, what to do. The instruction is certainly there. The guidance is certainly there in the instructions Srila Prabhupada gave and the system that he left for us and the society of devotees that he created. It's not that we're wandering in the wilderness alone, but we have so much guidance available to us. So we have access to the Uttama Adhikari in various ways. So it's also mentioned that if we can get descriptions of the Uttama Adhikari in various places, and one of those places is in the Bhagavad Gita, right from the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna talks about the Stita Pragya, one whose consciousness, stitta, is fixed how, but fixed in consciousness, who is fixed in consciousness means the consciousness is fixed in transcendence. Arjuna asks Krishna, Kabasha, and so on. How does he speak? How does he act? And so on. So then Krishna tells him. The first thing Krishna says is that he gives up all the desires that arise from the mind. They're prajahati adakaman sarvan parta manogatan. Manogatan, they arise from the mind. They're not from the soul. These things that we think we want, they're not actually what we need, what we ultimately want. As I mentioned, I often listen to translations of the Bhagavatam. I was just listening to the second chapter, or second canto, third chapter. That's where the famous akama sarvakamo va mokshakam udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. So it says, if you're full of desires, or you have no desires, whatever your situation is, you should worship Krishna tivrena bhakti yogena, with pure devotion. So just before that verse, this is right in the beginning of the third chapter, there's a whole list of, if you want this, worship this person. If you want this, worship that person. There's demigod. If you want this, worship that demigod. And as I was listening to it, I was thinking, well, I'm not a pure devotee, but I don't want these things. The things that are being mentioned here, like immense riches, it's not what I'm thinking about all the time. Oh, I really want to be rich. They're going down the list. I was thinking, well, I don't really have, so what do I want? What's my problem? What are my material desires exactly? And I said, well, maybe I want liberation, actually. I want freedom. I want freedom from suffering and freedom from anxiety. It's a kind of a generic desire that I have just to stop suffering and stop being in anxiety and of course not having to look forward to old age, disease, and death and whatever happens to this body. But the specific things that many people actually want these things. Some people, they really want to have great opulence, so they worship this demigod. But I think most of us, we probably don't think that way so much. You know, I really want to have a Mercedes Benz or whatever. So I just have to work hard to get that thing. So maybe that's not the problem exactly. But somehow there's still some desire to get out from under this tamagun, this feeling of, well, ultimately, what is it? It's separation from Krishna. Of course, that's what we really want. Our desire is disguised in different ways. We are crying in the wilderness in the sense that we've lost Krishna. We've lost our guardian, our master. There's that nice shloka by Yamunacharya. Bhavantam evan ucharan nirantara. Prashanta nishesha manoratantara. Tadaha mai kanchika nitya kinkara. Paharsha ishyami sanata jivatam. So he's praying. He wants a master. Prabhupada gives examples, just like a dog, a street dog. He's not happy, but if a dog has a master, then he wags his tail and smiles. Sometimes dogs smile. You ever see smiling dogs? So, so the happy dog, but there are street dogs not happy. So why is a dog happy? Because the dog has a master. So sanata jivatam. If one's life is sanata, anata, not anata. Anata means the Lord, a master. So if you have a master, because we need a master, the jiva, the minute jiva soul, is always dependent. So we need some kind of master. So we either let our Lord and Master Krishna take control, or our other master, taskmaster, Maya Devi, she takes control. We're always controlled somehow or other. So we are looking. That's really what we want. We're looking for that master. And we're also looking for the spiritual master, of course. This word, it's one of those words we just say, master, spiritual master. But when you think about it, master, what does it mean when you have a master? It means you have to do whatever that master tells you to do. You don't have any freedom. Probably in one purport, he says, it's like a sold-out animal. Now they have auctions, you know, people go there and they buy cattle or whatever. So what happens when you're sold, and the animal is sold, it just gets taken away by the master, and the master can do whatever it wants. So the disciple is supposed to be like that also, sold-out master, controlled completely by the spiritual master. So this, of course, as I was saying, the spiritual master is Uttama. He's in the transcendental platform. And what are the qualifications? The main point is that's being brought out in this verse, that he sees the material world as Krishna's energy. All the time. Prabhupada, of course, he exemplified this in the way he interacted with the world. For example, one of the things Prabhupada said was, a Brahmin never touches anything with his feet, or never moves anything. A Brahmin never moves anything with his feet. We're used to using our feet, just kick things aside. Something's in the way, just kick it aside. But no, this is Krishna's energy. And the feet, when you do things with the feet, it means disrespectful. Of course, you don't step over someone, you don't step on someone, obviously. The feet, because they're the lowest part of the body. And that's why we approach Krishna through the feet. That's an act of humility, because the feet are considered the lowest. Of course, Krishna's lotus feet, they're not low. But that's the symbolism there. So how Prabhupada said, the Brahmin never moves anything with his feet, because it's all Krishna's energy. And he sees everything that way. Yesterday, I think we were hearing about how it shouldn't be restricted, seeing Krishna. The neophyte devotee sees Krishna only in the temple. But that's a practice, actually. There's the one nice purport where Prabhupada says how it's advantageous for the neophyte devotee to come to the temple and worship the Lord as it is for the advanced devotee to worship him by active service. So why do we have temples? So the neophytes can come and see, oh, this is God's place. At least, if you don't see God everywhere, at least see God in the temple. At least see the paraphernalia as God's. Just like our Sankirtan paraphernalia. We started, I think it may have started when I said something some years ago, started putting this rug here. Because we should see this as Lord Chaitanya's paraphernalia. Just like Krishna's paraphernalia in the deity room. They're sacred things. So this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's paraphernalia. So it should be treated respectfully. You'll see in India often, mridangas are hung on usually they're hung on the wall often, or they're put in on a stand because they see that this is the paraphernalia of the Lord. So this and within a certain context related to the temple and the deity worship, we're seeing this belongs to Krishna and we don't disrespect it. certain things we would never even think about it. For example, there's no place to sit. We wouldn't go and sit on the Vyasasan next to Srila Prabhupada. Because, well, there's no chairs and I can't sit on the floor, so I'll just sit here. It wouldn't even occur to us such a thing. No, this is Prabhupada's. So the pure devotee sees the whole world like that. This is Krishna's. It all belongs to Krishna. So it should be treated with respect. And what is the respect? To use it in Krishna's service. So skipping to the end of the purport here, that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says, that if you don't see in that way, there's danger of becoming a Mayavadi. What is the idea there? Well, maybe it's this slogan of the Mayavadis, Brahman Satya Jagan Mitya. That spirit is truth, but this material world is mitya, it's false. So, of course, we can disrespect it because it's not even here. It's like a dream. It's not. There's nothing to it. It's just a phantasmagoria, like a mirage. It has no substance. But in those verses by Rupa Goswami, he says, no, because the material energy is connected to Krishna, then it's vastu, then it's substance, then it's real. So if you don't see in that way, then you can become an impersonalist. Oh, it's all nothing. Or voidist. So actually it's a great blessing that we have to use everything in Krishna's service. Because then we can interact with this world. We don't have to go off and live on a glacier in the Himalayas and leave everything. Prayena deva munayo sovi mukti kama, Prahlad says. People generally, they run away from society. They run away from the world. They go hide from everyone. A place where there's just nothing but ice, basically. That's the only material energy. But we have so much variety of material energy we have to deal with. So how do we deal with it? Use it in Krishna's service. And the Mahabhagavata knows how to do that. And of course, that was Prabhupada's supreme example that he showed. He didn't run away. He came right into the worst part of it, right into the thick of the mess. And he transformed it. That was his power, to transform it all by his vision, because he saw it as Krishna. Sometimes I think of Prabhupada, we hear about the really, really early days when Prabhupada had no followers. He was just by himself. Like he was living in that studio, yoga studio. Then he moved downstairs and just had a room by himself with nothing in it. He just had his trunk for a desk and maybe a mat to sit on. So Prabhupada was just alone all day long. And we may think, boy, that would be really lonely. But Prabhupada wasn't lonely. His spiritual master was there with him. Krishna was there with him. And of course, he was seeing, this is all Krishna's place. I'm sitting here in Vrindavan, or I'm sitting here with Krishna. This is Vrindavan. This is the vision of the Mahabhagavata, to see in this way. So we're going to hear more, I'm sure, about this same point as this unfolds, these different verses on these points. Well, I'll stop here. Anybody have any discussion? Tanaka Rishi Prabhu?
I recall it says, purport says, Uttama Adhikari sees the creation as Maya.
Mm.
So, Maya's service is to
delude us.
Yeah, so how does that transformation happen? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, it also mentioned Maya. It quoted the verse, Chayeva Yasya Bhuvanani Vibharati Durga. So Durga is Maya, but she's the energy of Krishna, and she works according to Krishna's command. So we can see, yes, she's doing her service for Krishna, which is to delude us. But what is that all about? Ultimately, it's about testing us, seeing if we're serious about getting free from the delusion. So we see her as an agent of Krishna, and in that way we're seeing Krishna. That's our vision. We know that she's not acting independently, and she's not acting with some evil motive, but she's acting, it's really mercy. Prabhupada actually says that another meaning of Maya is mercy. So Maya is Krishna's mercy. There's so many ways we can see Maya as mercy, as Krishna's mercy. In fact, that's the way we're taught, we're trained to see that whatever happens, it's Krishna. Now, of course, because it's Maya, it's Krishna's energy. It's coming through Maya, but it's Krishna's mercy. So that's why we, of course, we study the scriptures, and we're training ourselves to think that way. Because now, reflexively, we may think in some other way. So the way out, we're trying to change that reflex. We're trying to change our thinking habits. There's some of the self-help books, right, on how to change the way you think. So our scriptures are ultimately how to change the way we think. So that's part of it. See Maya as Krishna's mercy. And ultimately, we're trying to become free from her grasp by Krishna's mercy. Maya me tam tarantite. Only by bhakti can we overcome the influence of Maya Devi. Pushkar Prabhu.
You're mentioning about the mudangas and so being not thrown around, etc., paraphernalia. Mukunda Maharaj told me that he was there on the Bowery and a mudanga arrived. And I believe he said, because probably ran down all these stairs, he said, mudanga came and he took off his top, uttariya, and he wrapped. You remember this?
Yeah.
So it's a good example why we should always, often, as much as possible, read about Prabhupada. Because he set the standard, he has all the anecdotes and pastimes to substantiate what we should be doing.
Yeah.
He said they should never touch the ground.
He said the mridanga should never be naked.
Naked, yeah. So another thing is, in that vein, in Henry Street, Prabhupada had started to lead a kirtan on the Vyasa song, Vyasasa. And one of the GBC guys, everybody got up, was seated, got up, and he put his Bhagavatam down on this nicely woven woolen asana special for the VIPs. And Prabhupada stopped the kirtan. He's already started to sing. And he said, "You put Krishna where you sit."
Hmm.
You know, you're putting people put Bhagavatams anywhere. You see a new person, you give them a book, you know, they're in the temple and they'll just put it on the floor or something. But someone who's been around, they should know that you just don't put stuff here and there. Throw stuff on top. They'll throw bead bags on top of a Bhagavatam or even a bead bag, anything like a Bhagavatam. That's why it's supposed to have a cover and has the whole thing that goes with it.
Sometimes when you have so much opulence, you take it for granted. It's like books, even just a book itself, it used to be a very rare thing. So you can imagine that the only place where you could read the Bhagavatam maybe was to go to the temple, and it was sitting there in a special place. And so, but now we have books everywhere, so maybe there's a tendency to think, it's just a book. But no, they're all, Prabhupada said these are deities. In fact, he told devotees on traveling Sankirtan, the books can be your deities. You can have Mangal Arati to the Bhagavatam in the morning. You don't need to travel with deities. Yeah, these are all ways we're training to see things properly.
Actually, there was one devotee in, I know who it is, I won't mention, but not a big deal. In Vrindavan, he wanted to start a preaching center somewhere. He told Prabhupada, "I'm going to go there. I want to get some deities." And Prabhupada held up the Bhagavatam and said, "This is your deity."
Mm-hmm. How do you pray?
As the topic here is about seeing everything as Maya, I was reminded of this verse in the 14th chapter. Bhagavad Gita, Prakasham Chapravruttim Chamoham Emacha Pandav, Nadveshti Sampravruttani Nanivruttani Kangshati. It's very curious, this verse. I've struggled to understand it. I still don't. But I just thought I would bring this up. Prakasham. And so if you are in knowledge, if knowledge increases, Sampravruttani, that means Sattvagun, or Pravritti, you want to do something, Rajagun increases, or Moham, illusion, increases. So this is happening to the body. So sattva, rajatama, guna are acting on the body. Na dveshti sampravruttani. The person, the soul inside, who is in knowledge, who is seeing everything as Maya, including his own body, doesn't dislike when this happens. When the body goes under tamagun or sattva gun or rajagun. Na dveshti. sampravrittani, na nivrittani kangshati. And he doesn't desire that this should go away either. Udasinevat asino gunairyona vicharyate. He's sitting as a neutral, indifferent person to what's happening to the body. So, yeah, just reminded of that.
It seems like there are certain verses in the Bhagavad Gita that really stress on this equanimity, which is more of a yogic shanti position. So that's there. You find that a lot also in the teachings of Jadabharata, the Maharaj Rahugana, where he really emphasizes this idea of the oneness of spirit and equanimity and so on. So that I think we take it in that context that it's emphasizing a particular point that we have nothing to do with this energy. So when it's doing this or that, the yogi or the devotee is detached from it. But then you can say there's a higher vision where one sees, as a devotee, one sees the energy and engages it in Krishna's service. So that's sort of, you know, shanta rasa, you might say, or a stage of, not really shanta rasa, but a neutral way of looking at the material energy, being detached from it. Because that's like, you might say, the first step. The first step is, I'm not this body. I'm not this body, I'm not this material energy, so whatever is happening to it is not happening to me. So that sense of detachment is there. But then there's the next step is to engage it and say, oh, well, I'm not this energy, but this energy is Krishna's and should be engaged in Krishna's service.
So a few verses later, you're right, this emphasizes equanimity, sama dukkha sukha, whether you're criticized or you're praised, etc. But then Prabhupada emphasizes this, I think the third or fourth verse after this one is Krishna says, mam chayo bhyavacharina bhakti yogena sevati sagunam samatidhan tamavriyaya. So this stage of, this is the transcending the gunas, is responding to Arjuna's question. And then he's saying, by undeviating devotional service to me, you will be able to achieve this stage.
Yeah. One will achieve at least a stage of transcendence. But generally the devotee doesn't show that in his normal life. He doesn't just pull away from everything, the material energy. So that transcendence is there, but it seems like nowhere do we see that Krishna's telling Arjuna, well, in some sense he is, because he's glorifying the yogi. But he's also telling Arjuna to fight and indirectly telling us to Mamanushmara Yujjacha, fight and remember me at the same time. So as we know, of course, the Bhagavad Gita has different levels. It's true, though, because these two verses come so close together, it seems like when Krishna's saying, by devotional service, you're going to get this equanimity where you just shanti, 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 but we have to get other explanations in other places, it seems like.
I'm trying to understand this point that Srila Prabhupada was invited three times to see the deity in Vrajavasi's house in a morning walk. So Nalinikanta Prabhu, who was there, and he always curious why Prabhupada is not going. So on the third day, when the Vrajavasi invited him, he went in, and it was a big Durga deity. So Prabhupada bowed down. Generally, we never think how Prabhupada respected the Maya deity. So I'm trying to understand that. And then Prabhupada says, we folded him, she's such a perfect servant, she's doing her job so good. Then a little while he walks out and says, we should be afraid of Maya. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to understand what is that means. He just respected, by such a sophisticated way Prabhupada is handling. I'm just trying to grasp in my level how I can maintain respecting Maya at the same time.
How can we not respect Maya? She's a pure devotee. She's Krishna's energy. Expansion of Srimati Radharani. Such an exalted personality. So, and of course, so we respect her as a great devotee, and we also respect her strength to delude us. So that kind of respect too. We have to have a healthy respect. I find it interesting in Prahlad Maharaj's teachings, where Naivod Vijay Paradarataya Vaitaranya. So he says, basically, I'm not afraid of Maya because I'm always in ecstasy. But then later, when Narasimhadev is trying to give him benedictions, he says, I'm afraid of the material energy. So he says both things. So That's one of the characteristics of the Mahabhagavata, that their consciousness can accommodate apparent contradictions. So, and it's also different teachings are there. Yeah, you should be afraid of Maya, but still you should respect her and offer her, look at who she is. It's Krishna's energy. So naturally, you'd be in awe to be in her presence. And she's a pure devotee of Krishna, so you offer respect in that way. But at the same time, she has a job to do for Krishna, so we have to be afraid because she has so much power to delude us, keep us under her control. So it seems like it's reasonable to have both attitudes and visions of her.
So what I'm understanding that I should position myself always as the lotus feet of Vat Guru Krishna. Then it's probably, because same Mayadevi looks like guided Gop Kumara when he came to Varanasi. Get out from here. What are you doing? These are all going to delude you. Go to, get out of Mayavadi place. But then those souls...
When he went to Maya's dham, when he was traveling?
Yeah, he came to Banaras.
Oh, in Banaras.
And,
oh,
yes. And then Mayadevi personally came with Shiva and told him, get out, this is a bad place. But then all the souls are there, they're like all day meditating to Shiva and her, and then she's not guiding them. So it's obviously personal intention of the soul that she is responding, looks like, according to.
I think it's in about Madhuri Karamani or Jivadharma that it's mentioned that it's the same personality, the internal and the external potencies, but she's dealing differently according to the jiva, what their position is, what their desire is. Mm-hmm. And so in the same way, in the same city, like you were saying, she might be dealing with everybody who's there as the external potency. She's just, you know, facilitating their illusion of Mayavad. But for the devotee who's there, she's saying, get out of here, it's a bad place. Because if she's actually the same person, she's dealing, though, as the internal potency for the devotee. And that's the external potency for the non-devotee. So that point is made.
Yeah. Ultimately, there's Krishna and his energy. So, especially the energy is considered feminine. So it begins with Srimati Radharani, and then she expands in so many different ways. Let's go on the lady's side now. I've got my hands over there.
Hare Krishna. So in the purport, Maya was described as a shadow of Krishna. And I have a hard time understanding that because it seems that she's got her own independent program going on.
She has her independent, well, that's the point, is that she doesn't. Maya works under what Krishna does. She does what Krishna tells her to do. Chaya. She's not independent. Of course, none of us are independent. And she's especially not independent because she does exactly what she's asked to do. She does her job perfectly.
So it's still hard for me to understand, like, you know, all the horrible things we see in the world, like murder or abuse or, you know, just all the really awful things that go on. How do we see that as a shadow of Krishna?
Oh, you're talking about, well...
Well, one thing is to understand where
what
we're affected
by Maya,
Maya, but
the energy, the person, the activities, the whole material world. Yeah, these things are categorized and they're described in different ways. But in one sense, I was talking about how it's not real. In a sense, it isn't real. It's just like a nightmare. So in a nightmare, nothing is happening to you, but you think something is happening to you. Nothing is really happening to the soul. Asango Hyayam Purusha. The soul is never actually in touch with Maya. It's just a kind of hallucination. That's one way to see it. Of course, I can be taken too far. Because there was one morning walk where someone brought up the point. I think the Mayavadi, I think it may have been this Mr. Patel, Dr. Patel. Because they say that it's not real, then you don't have to engage in spiritual life because, well, it's not real. Why make spiritual advancement? Just deal with it. It's just an illusion. It's like a bad dream. Of course, the point is, no, to us it's real. It seems real because we identify with these bodies. We identify with the illusion. But, yes, she's creating all this on Krishna's... Well, it's hard to make... Then the question is, well, why does Krishna make it so? Because ultimately it's Krishna's desire. Let me get into Deja. I was reading a purport recently in the seventh canto where Prabhupada was really heavy about not judging Krishna. I remember on a morning walk to, someone asked a question that was kind of challenging, like, why does Krishna do such and such? And Prabhupada basically said, don't ask that question. You're not in a position to ask why Krishna does things. So it's like we always, the devotee has a very respectful attitude towards Krishna. So even in the material world, maybe we can't understand because sometimes we think, and I know some people struggle with this, but it's so much suffering. And it seems like it's so hard to get out of it. What's the point? And, well, somehow Krishna knows best. We don't. We have our small brains. We don't have his perspective. So the horrible things going on under Maya's control, somehow that's Krishna's will, ultimately, that it goes on. It's not exactly his desire, and ultimately it's his desire, but it's the living entity's desires that are being played out. And Maya's facilitating that. It's another way to look at it. She's just responding. All right, let's stop here, 9 o'clock. Srila Prabhupada Gita.